Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Susie Haynes reading the Midland Reporter Telegram, local and state, for Saturday, January 14th, 2023. China Demand Boosts Oil Prices by Mella McEwen. Bullish sentiment about China's oil demand sent oil prices to their biggest gains since October. West Texas Intermediate on the New York Mercantile Exchange rose all five trading days of the week, with its biggest jump a $2.29 gain Wednesday. WTI added $1.47 Friday to close the week at $79.86, up from $73.77 at last Friday's close and marking an 8% weekly advance. The posted price ended the week at $76.34, according to the Plains All-American. Unseasonably warm weather continued to chill natural gas prices on the NYMEX, though prices at the Henry Hub added 20 cents to open the trading week. That was followed by a 27-cent drop Tuesday that prices could not overcome Wednesday and Thursday. Prices sank another 27.6 cents Friday to close at $3.419 per MCF, down from $3.710 at last Friday's close. Pioneer Natural Resources Chief Executive Officer Scott Sheffield said at the Goldman Sachs Global Energy and Clean Technology Conference that the industry is seeing record low reinvestment, and showed his audience a slide that the nation's energy industry is spending $1 trillion less than it did in 2012 through 2014. "We're setting ourselves up for another price reset," Sheffield stated. "It's my firm belief that we are setting up for a base price of $90 a barrel with an upside of $150 between now and 2030, he said. Sheffield attributed those beliefs to several factors, beginning with the withdrawals from the nation's strategic petroleum reserve, which means it can't be used that much more. Second, he pointed out, economic recessions have been shown to have little impact on oil demand. And third, he said, China will come back from COVID-19 lockdowns and come back strong. He is also a firm believer in higher natural gas prices alongside higher crude prices. The U.S. Energy Information Administration, in its January short-term energy outlook, forecast a decline in prices beginning the second half of the year, slashing its forecast for the international benchmark Brent by 16%. The EIA now forecasts Brent will average $83 a barrel in the first quarter, staying relatively flat to around $85 a barrel through the second quarter, and then decline, averaging $83 for all of 2023 and $78 in 2024. For West Texas Immediate, the EIA predicts a similar path, averaging $77 in 2023 and $72 in 2024. In his daily e-newsletter, Edward Moya, senior market analyst at the Americas for Oanda, said energy traders are starting to price in a little bit more crude demand from Europe, not just China. The oil market is looking like it will remain tight as the world's two largest economies' respective outlooks have dramatically improved over the past couple of weeks. The U.S. might have a shallow recession, and China's reopening is gaining momentum, he wrote. Interactions Key to F-45 Training's Atmosphere by Ben Schaefer. With the arrival of 2023, many around the country will base their New Year's resolutions around fitness goals. Whether the goal revolves around losing or gaining an exact weight amount, or generally becoming more active, F-45 Training in North Midland, 4425 West Wadley Avenue, is an empowering and encouraging environment to reach those goals. F45 is a functional gym that specializes in 45-minute group training classes in resistance, cardio, or a hybrid of both, led by two personal trainers per class. According to the manager, Katie McDonald, there are classes running throughout the day for Midlanders with a cramped schedule. F45's first sessions of the day begin at 4:45 a.m., and the last one takes place at 6:20 p.m. F45's customers are outspoken in their satisfaction with the gym. Google reviews shows 43 reviews for the training facility. All 43 rate it 5 out of 5 stars. The best gym I've ever been to. Such a great part of my fitness journey. The trainers are super motivating, and I have fun with the people every time we work out. This place is such a great atmosphere. Trey Urban, a Google reviewer, posted. Urban's post is one of many that comments on F45's one-of-a-kind atmosphere. McDonald says it comes from a strong relationship between members and trainers. That feeling comes from the members interacting with the trainers and us getting into the community, making sure that no one feels left out, McDonald said. They always have somebody that they can fall back on in the class. Along with the relationships between member and coach, member Nicole Morrison shared her thoughts on the relationships that can be built between members. F45 has been the best gym experience ever. Not only do you get great workouts that are always changing, the online app helps you understand food and what you should be eating. It lays out the meals for you, and they are really good. The trainers are amazing and help push you to be better. I've also made so many friends who share the same love of fitness, and we all push each other every day, she posted in an online review. McDonald said customers in general love the coaches, atmosphere, and the ability to make new friends. She added that although there is a slight uptick in new members at the beginning of a year, enrollment remains steady all 12 months. Just because people want to know what F45 is about, they come in and try it out. But we do run our specials at the beginning of the year, so it does help, she said. Most of F45's new members will try it out and stick around. McDonald said their typical new client will stay a member for at least 6 months, with many staying longer. Midland Livestock Show Saturday, 4 Reasons Why You Should Go, by Morgan Taylor Thomas. You may be thinking, just because I live in West Texas does not mean I want to go to a livestock show. And honestly, I wouldn't argue with you. However, the 72nd annual Midland County Livestock Association event is more than a barn filled with farm animals hanging out in cattle-fenced pens. Need some proof? Mason Lee, a freshman, started showing lambs and goats in third grade. At 6 a.m., he goes out to their pen to change water and complete other morning chores. Then he attends a full day of school. Once he gets home, he works his goats and lambs, sometimes one-on-one, sometimes all together, feeds them, and finishes their nighttime list of activities before turning the barn lights out at 10 p.m. For the last 6 years, he's kept the same routine every day with his animals, making sure not to disrupt their schedule. Why? When you first get them, they're scared. They just run away as fast as they can, Lee explained. The first week I get them, there's no working. I just tie their heads up and spend all day petting them so they'll like me. It's important that you're bonding with them so they act better. Note, students can show up to 6 animals in each species: cattle, poultry, pig, rabbit, lamb, and goat. Most students will be showing more than one animal in their preferred species plus another species. For Samantha Ivy, showing livestock teaches her life lessons about responsibility and structure. A 6-year veteran, she keeps her lambs in tip-top shape, washing and wrapping their legs weekly, and spending quality work plus playtime with them daily. She recognizes that kids not involved in 4-H may not understand why she and her fellow showmates would spend the time and energy preparing these animals to walk around a ring for 10 minutes max. But at the end of the day, it's an experience she wouldn't trade for the world. Plus, nothing beats a big old belt buckle. You don't say this out loud, but anytime you go to a major, you look at everyone's buckle you're competing against. Ivy joked, if it says grand champion, you're thinking, oh, they're good. Note, majors are the best of the best. held in Austin, Houston, San Angelo, San Antonio, and Fort Worth. There, animals are officially sold, and students can receive some of the highest honors, including hefty scholarships. When it comes to steer showing, maintaining their weight and coat can be one of the hardest challenges a student faces. You know, besides actually having to guide a slightly agitated 1,500-pound cow through a ring full of other slightly agitated 1,500-pound cows without panicking. Carly Robinette, an 8-year veteran, says she feeds her steer 34 pounds a day, 22 pounds of mixed protein, fibers, and fat in the morning, and 12 pounds of wheat hay at night. It's a really great thing to be involved in, and every kid here has been working very hard through the show season. We just want to show everybody the hard work we put into our animals, Robinette said. Saturday's premium auction sale remains sponsorship style. This means buyers will not actually be purchasing animals, but will be helping the students pay off debts and plan for next season. This money also helps a lot of students prepare for college. Without these contributions, many participants wouldn't be able to afford the price of animal upkeep, therefore taking away their ability to compete. We're teaching these kids fundamental traits. They learn hard work, responsibility, setting a budget and following it, and knowing that a certain number of things have to get done every day to get an animal to this show. I mean, most of these kids have a checking account at 10 years old, Brent Hoover, Midland County Livestock Association president, said. It's kids and animals. Are there two greater things for people to watch? These kids have worked really hard, and it's fun for them to show off what they've accomplished. When you watch a 10-year-old girl walk a 1,200-pound steer in the show ring, do you understand how much work she's done to be able to control an animal that outweighs her 30 times? Saturday schedule, 10 a.m. judging of culinary arts. Surprise, these kids also bake cakes. Just like the livestock show, a grand champion award will be given, and then slices of cake will be available for purchase as well. Each individual cake's proceeds go back to the baker. 11:30 a.m. Pee-wee Goat Show. 4-H students must range from 8 years to seniors in high school. The Pee-wee Show is for kids 7 and under. 12 p.m. Welcome to the sale. 12:10 p.m. Premium Auction Sale and Awards. To learn more about the MCLA and how to help fund and support local cowboys and cowgirls, visit www.facebook.com/MCLATX. Tall City Crowdfunding for Brick and Mortar by Morgan Taylor Thomas. For the first time in over 25 years, a four-walled bagel shop may call Midland home once again. New York native Mike Scolotman started Tall City Bagel last October, participating in local farmers markets and hosting pop-ups around town at establishments such as the Fuel Bar and Eccentric Brewing Company. A large and continuously growing following encouraged the 3-year Midlander to look into a brick and mortar. After watching Far West Coffee reach out to the community, the culinary artist figured he should try the same. To get the dough rolling, Scolotman needs $45,000. What does this cover? The construction required to bring the location up to city code if I want to put in a drive-through window, the construction to put the hole in the roof for the vent system, paving of the parking lot if it needs it, help pay employees, and then, of course, all of the equipment going from a cottage home to commercial equipment. 40-quart mixers, more ovens, Scolotman explained. With loyal customers already donating, Scolotman's current total rings in less than $5,000. I love that so many people contributed and have been really supportive of my business, always coming back for more and writing good things on Facebook, Scolotman said. People can donate through an array of outlets. Those looking to send a direct donation can use Cash App, $TalkCityBagel, or PayPal at Tall City Bagel. However, those who use the crowdfunding website, https://www.tallcitybagel.com, bit.ly/3cnoyrf or https://crowdfunding.tallcitybagel.com can pick from an array of perks before donating. Some perks include bagel and sticker for $15, any New York bagel plus cream cheese schmear of your choice, and a limited edition sticker upon opening. The Williamsburg, $25. Coupon for sliced Nova Lox, red onion, tomato, and capers, plus cream cheese schmear on your choice of a bagel or hard roll with coffee or canned soda, redeemable anytime after shop opens, and a limited edition sticker. Coffee tumbler, $100. Limited edition, I helped proof their dough. Insulated tumbler that gives you half-price coffee every time you use it for a refill at the shop. Private soft opening invite, $250. Invitation for four to the private soft opening party packed with a guided tour of the shop, party trays of New York bagels, schmears, champagne, and mimosa bar, New York coffee, soda, and a chance to be among the first to tag up on the Brooklyn replica graffiti wall. Bagel MVP, $5,000. A baker's dozen and a pound of schmear every week for a whole year. Choice a birthday pizza party or private bagel brunch package, and take part in the grand opening ribbon cutting, plus invites to the private and VIP soft opening parties. Patrons can choose from 24 different incentives, ranging in price, including a pay-your-own option of direct donation. Many of the prizes can be shipped as well for out-of-towners. Scholotman hopes for an end-of-April, early-May opening. To stay up to date on the project, as well as how to place an order and where to find Scholotman's latest pop-up, follow Tall City Bagel on Facebook at www.facebook.com/tall-citybagelmtx. Other fun facts. The Tall City Bagel brick and mortar will become the first bagel shop in Texas to use a tap water filtration system that will turn the restaurant's tap water into New York City water, placing the cherry on top of the already New York-style bagels. The filtration water alters the taste effect on ingredients through extra filtration and disinfection. The water will be used in Tall City Bagel's pizza and bagel dough. Speaking of pizza, the business will start offering pizza, chicken salad, and other tasty treats during the lunch hours. Tall City Bagel is the first bagel company to represent Texas in the National Bagel Association. See more at www.bagels.org. What's up with Midland? Eccentric Brewing Company, Singer-Songwriter Night, January 21st. Horseshoe Arena, West Texas Wedding Expo, January 29th. La Hacienda Event Center, Los Del Limit y Los Bravos de Ojinaga, January 20th. Laberinto, January 27th. Museum of the Southwest, Marfa Comes to Midland, January 19th. Downtown Farmers Market, January 20th. Seymour Fogel, January 24th. Simon Whatnot, January 24th. Tall City Brewing Company, three beer releases, January. Chicken Parmigiana Pasta Night, January 19th. Pint Night, January 20th. Live music with R.I. Wolf, January 21st. And Boss Babe Market, January 22nd. Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center, Chester Gregory, Tribute to Jackie Wilson and Friends, January 24th. Aaron Lewis, January 27th. Fortune Feimster, January 29th. Community Roundup. State of Oil and Gas. The Midland Chamber of Commerce's State of Oil and Gas Luncheon is set for 11 a.m. Tuesday at the Bush Convention Center. Richard Daly, President and COO of Pioneer Natural Resources, will deliver the keynote address. Contact the Midland Chamber of Commerce for information on tickets or go to business.midlandtxchamber.com/events/details/2023-state-of-oil-gas-10972. Solid Waste Schedule. The City of Midland has modified its trash pickup schedule for January 16th through the 20th. There will be no trash pickup on Monday because of the Martin Luther King Jr. holiday. Monday's regular pickup will take place Tuesday, and Tuesday's regular pickup will take place Wednesday. Regular service is set for Thursday and Friday. MISD Calendar. Drafts of two proposed school calendars for the 2023 through 24 school year have been posted at midlandisd.net/calendar-drafts. The district is soliciting comments from parents, teachers, and the public regarding their preferred calendar. Calendar. Chocolate Decadence, presented by the Aphasia Center of West Texas, 6:30 p.m., January 27th, Odessa Marriott Hotel and Conference Center. Dog Rescue RS, a Golden Tail Casino Potty, Monday, 7 to 10 p.m., January 28th, Ranchland Hills Golf Club, online at drru.org. From Disability to Possibility, The Power of Inclusive Classrooms, presented by Bynum School, February 17th, Bynum School. Upcoming meetings, Planning and Zoning, 3:30 p.m. Tuesday, City Council City Hall, 300 North Lorraine Street. Midland College, noon, Tuesday, Fireplace Room, Midland Country Club. Midland College, 4 o'clock p.m., Tuesday, Gibson Boardroom. Midland ISD, 5:30 p.m., Tuesday, Bowie Fine Arts Academy, 805 Elk Avenue. Police join search for missing leopard at Dallas Zoo. A missing clouded leopard shut down the Dallas Zoo on Friday as police helped search for the animal that officials described as not dangerous and likely hiding somewhere on the zoo grounds. The small cat weighs about 20 to 25 pounds, said Harrison Edel, executive vice president of animal care and conservation at the Dallas Zoo. The search inside Texas's largest zoo was focused on scouring trees, which Adele said clouded leopards like to climb. The zoo tweeted that the missing cat, named Nova, was a serious situation, but Adele said the animal posed no threat to humans. If anything, she's really nervous and afraid of people, Adele said. He did not say how the animal escaped its enclosure. Another clouded leopard at the zoo, Nova's sister, was still in its habitat, Adele said. In 2004, a 340-pound gorilla jumped over the zoo's walls before police shot and killed the animal. New program will help fly asylum seekers out of Texas. Austin is joining forces with the City of San Antonio to help asylum seekers travel to their final destinations in the U.S., with the Texas cities agreeing to coordinate efforts to arrange flights outside the state. Officials expect to serve as many as 120 people daily and will seek full reimbursement from the federal government for the cost of the program, which begins Friday, Austin authorities said in a statement. The flights from Austin's airport will be offered to people who have gone through initial processing for their asylum claims, sought service through San Antonio's Migrant Resource Center, and are seeking to travel elsewhere in the U.S. Cities in Texas have struggled to cope with the sharp increase in migrants streaming over the Mexican border to seek asylum in the U.S., often leaving shelters overrun and straining resources at charities set up to help the travelers. Republican Governor Greg Abbott has come under harsh criticism from Democrats after he started a program to bus migrants across the U.S. without coordinating with officials at their destinations. Democrat-led cities like San Antonio and El Paso have also chartered buses for migrants, but have done so with the cooperation of aid groups at their destinations. Since the start of last year, San Antonio has helped more than 365,000 asylum seekers get to their final destinations in the U.S. Last month, the city saw a daily average of 1,200 arrivals. Permian rig increase helps break slump across U.S. Drilling activity recovered from last week's seven-week slump by adding rigs, the first addition in 3 weeks. Oilfield services firm Baker Hughes said Friday the U.S. rig count it has issued weekly since the 1940s rose 3 rigs to 775. That puts the rig count 174 or 29% higher than the 601 counted a year ago. The number of rigs drilling for crude rose by 5, the biggest increase since November, to 623 rigs, 131 more than the 492 last January. The number of rigs drilling for natural gas dipped to 150 for the lowest tally since last May, but still 41 more than the 109 the prior January. Texas inched up 1 rig for 379 at work across the Lone Star State, 98 more than the 281 active rigs last year. New Mexico added 3 rigs for 103, California 1 and Louisiana 1 joined Texas and New Mexico as producing states to see increases. Colorado 1 and Oklahoma 2 were the only two producing states to see declines. The Permian Basin added 3 rigs for 356, 63 more than 293 drilling across the region last year. The Mississippian and Eagle Ford joined the Permian as producing areas to see increases. Lee County, New Mexico remains the most active county in the Permian, with 66 rigs, up 2 for the week. Martin County is second with 36, also up 2 rigs for the week. Eddy County, New Mexico added 1 rig for 35, closely followed by Reeves County with 34 rigs, unchanged for the week. Midland County lost 2 rigs and has 30 for the week. Loving County held at 29 rigs a second week, while Howard County reported 22 rigs for a fourth week. Upton and Ward counties each reported 16 rigs for a second week. Glasscock County had 11 rigs, down 1. Culberson County had 10 rigs for a fourth week. The U.S. rig count reached 868 during the week ended January 11th, rising by 7 from the previous week, according to Enverus Foundations, part of the energy-focused software as a service firm Enverus. The count is up 1% from a month earlier and up 21% year over year. In the last week, the Permian added 2 rigs to reach 336, and the Anadarko Basin rose by 1 to 84. The Appalachian, DJ, and Williston Basins were flat at 56, 20, and 41 rigs. The Gulf Coast declined by 1 rig to 115. Notable changes in the last month include an 11-rig increase in the Permian and 3-rig drops in both the Anadarko Basin and the Gulf Coast. Chinese oil demand seen hitting record. Chinese oil consumption is expected to hit a record this year as the world's biggest importer leaves the straitjacket of COVID-0 behind, bolstering the global demand outlook and aiding prices. Daily demand, which contracted last year, will climb by 800,000 barrels a day in 2023, according to the median estimate of 11 China-focused consultants surveyed by Bloomberg News. That would take consumption to an all-time high of about 16 million barrels a day, the survey showed. Crude's fortunes over the coming year hinge to a major extent on China, as well as on decisions by OPEC+, the impact of sanctions on Russian flows, and the arc of monetary policy. Oil's bulls, of which there are many, have built a large part of their outlook on growth in Chinese demand, with Goldman Sachs Group Incorporated's Jeffrey Curry saying that crude is the best reopening play. Demand recovery is expected to accelerate from the second quarter onward as traffic rebounds and the number of flights, especially international flights, gradually recovers, says Yi-Chin Lin, research associate of oils and refineries at Wood Mackenzie Limited, who estimates daily demand will rise by 970,000 barrels. Other market watchers have also flagged prospects for a sharp rebound in consumption. The International Energy Agency, which advises major economies, forecasts that global demand will grow by 1.7 million barrels a day in 2023, citing expansion in China as well as India, according to its December outlook. Brent crude, the global benchmark, traded near $85 a barrel on Friday, headed for a weekly gain. Still, that's well down from a peak near $140 following Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Goldman's Curry expects prices to hit $110 by the third quarter. ING Group, NV, and UBS Group, AG, are also positive. Data Friday showed that China's crude imports hit a record for the month of December, as shipments in the final quarter of last year came in almost a fifth higher than the preceding 3 months. At the same time, Chinese buyers have been tapping markets in North America, West Africa, the North Sea, and Mediterranean, looking for oil for arrival in March and April. The expected rebound will likely be felt starting from next quarter after early waves of COVID-19 subside and as greater mobility lifts pent-up consumption of transport fuels, especially gasoline and jet fuel, while petrochemical demand also recovers. Stronger second-quarter demand from China could offset the usual seasonal weakness in crude that comes with refinery maintenance and the absence of seasonal demand uplift given a warmer-than-average January so far. Energy Aspects Limited analyst, including Amrita Sen, wrote in a January 9th note, "The expected uptick could even offset lower Russian exports," they added. Still, the immediate road ahead may not be smooth as the swift dropping of curbs and surge in mobility initially bring a surge in infections. Looking at waves in places like Hong Kong and Japan, usually mobility would have a big spike after the first wave, said Gao Mingyu, chief energy analyst at SDIC Essence Futures Company. However, as more outbreaks followed, mobility levels would then slow and fail to return to its peaks. Yellen, U.S. expected to hit debt limit Thursday, by Fatima Hussein. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen notified Congress on Friday that the U.S. is projected to reach its debt limit on Thursday and will then resort to extraordinary measures to avoid default. In a letter to House and Senate leaders, Yellen said her actions will buy time until Congress can pass legislation that will either raise the nation's $31.4 trillion borrowing authority or suspend it again for a period of time. But, she said, it's critical that Congress act in a timely manner. Failure to meet the government's obligations would cause irreparable harm to the U.S. economy, the livelihoods of all Americans, and global financial stability, she said. In the past, even threats that the U.S. government might fail to meet its obligations have caused real harms, including the only credit rating downgrade in the history of our nation in 2011, she said. Yellen was referring to the debt ceiling impasse during Barack Obama's presidency when Republicans had also just won a House majority. In this new Congress, the debt ceiling debate will almost certainly trigger a political showdown between newly empowered GOP lawmakers who now control the House and want to cut spending, and President Joe Biden and Democratic lawmakers who had enjoyed one-party control over Washington for the past 2 years. The White House has insisted that it won't allow the nation's credit to be held captive to the demands of GOP lawmakers. "We have seen both Republicans and Democrats come together to deal with this issue," White House spokesperson Karine Jean-Pierre told reporters Friday. "It's one of the basic items that Congress has to deal with, and it should be done without conditions." House Republican leaders liken the debt ceiling to a credit card limit and have said they would only raise the statutory ceiling if doing so also secures a spending overhaul. New House Speaker Kevin McCarthy told reporters in his first press conference that he had a very good conversation with Biden about the coming debt ceiling debate. We don't want to put any fiscal problems to our economy, and we won't. But fiscal problems would be continuing to do business as usual, he said. We've got to change the way we are spending money. McCarthy has floated the kind of budget cap deal that was engineered in the last go-around on the debt ceiling during the Trump administration, which would involve capping federal spending levels in return for the House votes needed to raise the debt limit. But any effort to compromise with House Republicans could force Biden to bend on his own priorities, whether that's money for the IRS to ensure that wealthier Americans pay what they owe, or domestic programs for children and the poor. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer and new House Democrat leader Hakeem Jeffries said in a joint statement Friday that a default forced by extreme MAGA Republicans could plunge the country into a deep recession and lead to even higher costs for America's working families on everything from mortgages and car loans to credit card interest rates. They said the two parties worked together to increase the debt limit 3 times when Trump was president and Republicans had majority in the House and Senate. This time should be no different, the Democrat leader said. Yellen said that while Treasury can't estimate how long the extraordinary measures will allow the U.S. to continue to pay the government's obligations, it is unlikely that cash and extraordinary measures will be exhausted before early June. Report: Educational Wage Gap in Midland by Ben Schaefer. There is a 40.6% difference in median annual wage between college graduates and high school graduates in Midland, according to a study by Smartest Dollar. College graduates with a full-time position in Midland earned $80,000 a year, while high school graduates in a full-time job earned $41,000. The report states that although institutions around the country are seeing a decline in enrollment, median wage for workers with professional degrees has grown more than 15% since the year 2000. But for those without a college degree, real median annual wages have declined by 4.1%. Midland is ranked 11th in U.S. small metro areas for educational wage gap, 10th in median annual wage for full-time college graduates, and 32nd in percentage of full-time workers with college degrees. But college education comes at a cost, and students in recent decades have struggled with rising tuition and fees. According to data from the College Board, inflation-adjusted tuition and fees for a public four-year college are 2.25 times higher than they were 3 decades ago, while private nonprofit four-year colleges cost 1.8 times more, Smartest Dollar reported. Report: Midland ranks 6th nationwide for PPP loans by Ben Schaefer. Midland ranked 6th among small city businesses nationwide that took loans from the Payment Protection Program, a federal initiative that allowed companies with fewer than 500 employees to apply for forgivable loans, according to a new study by Smartest Dollar. The onset of the COVID-19 pandemic strained many small local businesses. The PPP fund was intended to help businesses keep their doors open by retaining employees and boosting local economies. According to the study, Midland businesses received about $800.7 million in total PPP funds, $6,099 per capita, 95.5% of which was forgiven. Midland was the lone Texas city to rank in the top 15 of smaller cities across the nation. The Midland industry sectors that received the most PPP funds were mining, quarrying, and oil and gas extraction. Midland's median PPP loan amount was $20,833, the study shows. Railroad Commission: Midland, Martin County's top 30 million barrels in October by Stuart Doreen. October was a good month for oil production for Midland County and much of the Permian Basin, according to preliminary reports from the Railroad Commission of Texas. Neighboring counties Midland and Martin again dominated the monthly report with 17.324 million and 13.648 million barrels produced, respectively, according to the RRC. That total accounted for 27.9% of the 110.72 million barrels produced in October across the state. The impact among neighboring counties in this part of the Permian went further. Midland, Martin, Upton, and Howard were the four highest producing counties in the state and combined for 45.601 million barrels, or 41.1% of the total in Texas. The Railroad Commission also reported that nine counties across the Permian Basin were among the top 10 across the state and combined to produce 61.2% of the oil across the state. Counties across the Permian also made up the top two for natural gas produced. Reeves again was first with 83.688 billion cubic feet produced. Midland County was second at 61.224 billion. The RRC reported seven Permian Basin counties in the top 10 statewide and 848.93 billion cubic feet produced statewide. In October 2021, the preliminary production of crude oil was 112.667 million barrels. The updated total was 130.745 million. During the same month, the preliminary production of gas was 821.516 billion cubic feet. The updated total was 955.649 billion cubic feet. Obituaries. David V. Schneider. David was born in Des Moines, Iowa on July 16, 1956, to Nancy and Vernon Schneider. He went to his eternal home on January 7, 2023, after living with pancreatic cancer for 7 months. David is survived by Cindy, his wife of 44 years, his three children, Diana Rendon, Christian Schneider Borger, and David Schneider. He also leaves four beautiful grandchildren. He is also survived by his mother Nancy and three brothers, Kirk, Mark, and John Schneider. A memorial service celebrating David's life will be held at Coker United Methodist Church, 231 East North Loop Road in San Antonio, on Saturday, January 21st at 10:30 p.m., following a private family burial at Coker Cemetery. A celebration of life reception will be held at the Briscoe Museum of Western Art on 210 West Market Street in downtown San Antonio on Sunday, January 22nd from 11:30 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. In lieu of flowers, those who wish to make a charitable contribution in David's honor may consider one of the organizations he was passionate about during his life, including Coker Cemetery Association, the South Texas Blood and Tissue Center Foundation, the Briscoe Museum of Western Art, Coker United Methodist Church, or Mays Cancer Center. You are invited to sign the guest book at www.porterloring.com. Harry W. Hugley. Harry Walter Hugley, 93, was born October 17, 1929, in San Antonio, Texas, and passed away on January 11, 2023. He was the only child of immigrant Swiss and German parents, Walter and Hilde Hugley, who preceded him in death. He married Elsie Mae Seymour in Pueblo, Colorado on July 21, 1956, and they were married for 62 years before she passed away in 2019. They have four daughters, Donna Hugley, Kara Hugley, Linda Bryant, and Sandra Oldham. In accordance with his wishes, his ashes will be scattered in his beloved Rocky Mountain National Park, and the family will hold a private and very short memorial service later. If desired, memorial contributions can be made to Hospice of Midland or your charity of choice. Tommy Keith Flood. Tommy Keith Flood passed away December 7, 2022 in Midland, Texas. He was born April 18, 1949, in La Mesa, Texas, to George Washington Flood and Joella Todd Flood. He is survived by his wife, Patty Flood of Midland, Texas, son Aaron Flood and his three children, stepson Kevin Eamon, stepdaughters Kelly Eamon Hernandez and Jamie Hightower, brother Benny Flood, sisters Sandra Buckaloo, Kathy Flood Owls, and Kayla Gillette. Tommy is preceded in death by his parents, George Washington Flood and Joella Todd Flood, his brothers Sam Flood and Joe Flood. A celebration of life service will be held on Thursday, January 19, 2023, starting at 12:30 p.m. at Stonegate Fellowship, 6000 West Wadley Avenue, Midland, Texas, 79707 in Building F. Funeral arrangements are entrusted to Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. Online condolences can be received at www.asanchezTFH.com. Jan Miller Hayes. Frances Janet Harper Miller Hayes, 79 of Midland, passed away on January 9, 2023. Her husband, Howard Irvin Hayes, passed away December 31, 2022. A memorial service for both Jan and Howard will be held at 10 a.m. Saturday, January 28, 2023, at Christ Church Anglican, 5501 North Midkiff in Midland. Mark Anthony Valdez, Sr. Mark Anthony Valdez, Sr., 61 of Midland, passed away January 9, 2023. Funeral service will be held at 3:30 p.m. Monday, January 16, 2023, at Nally Pickle & Welch Funeral Home Chapel. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle & Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com.
This is Jane reading for the OA for Saturday, January 14th. Howard wants MISD to move forward. Having spent 14 years at Midland ISD with strong ties in the community, Stephanie Howard decided to try for the superintendent's job. Howard was superintendent at Crane ISD for about a year and a half. She was deputy superintendent at Ector County ISD and had been superintendent in Plains. Midland is where she became an assistant principal and principal. I learned so much here and worked with some great people and did some really good things over those 14 years, I think, Howard said. She left in the first place to have an opportunity to work in district-level administration as superintendent in Plains ISD. That led her to Ector County Independent School District. The Midland superintendent's job had been open three times in the past 5 years. The time before this, Howard said she would get calls and texts asking if coming back or saying that she heard she was coming back, but she hadn't applied. You don't usually get a job you don't apply for, but this time it was really unexpected. I had just gotten to Crane, and I'd been there a year and a half and really thought that would be my last stop before I retired. She never expected the MISD job to open up so quickly. The contract says her annual salary is $280,000 plus benefits such as $100 a month for communications, like a cell phone. When it did, of course, I immediately had people reaching out to me, people I've worked with before, parents, community members that I knew. It was a real tough decision because with Corley, the youngest of her two daughters, in school, we had to make sure that was going to be a good transition for her. But the longer we thought about it, the more it seemed like it was the right time to put my name in that hat to see what happened. I felt more compelled this time to come back and to provide some stable leadership and be here for a while. She said there has been a lot of turnover, and that's hard on adults, but it's really hard on kids because that affects all of them. They may never know it. They usually don't know what the superintendent does or who they are, but at the end of the day, when there's that much transition, it affects them in the long run. So I felt like it was a good time to try to come back and provide that stability and leadership and then move the district in the direction that we needed to go. Asked if she had any apprehension about going for the job, given the number of superintendents MISD has had in the past several years, Howard said she wouldn't say that was the feeling. When you go through the process interviewing with the board, it's very different than any other experience. When you're going through a superintendent search, it's all about a good fit and feeling like there's that connection with the board. It was obvious and very evident from the beginning that this is a board that is ready to work together, that's ready to do the work that we need to move the district forward, Howard said. I felt like I already knew them, had a relationship with them, and they knew of my work when I was in that district before. So I feel like there were not a lot of surprises with the group. But I'm the kind of superintendent that is going to come in and do what's right for the kids. I'm going to work with the board. I expect that this relationship will be really good. That team of eight is critical. We all have to be on the same page and pull in the same direction to move the district forward. I feel like we have a team of eight that's ready to do that, Howard said. She added that she felt good about the hiring process throughout. You don't ever know what's going to happen until you get to the end of it. I didn't know about the decision to hire until I guess it was about 10:30 or 10:40 at night when I finally got the call. They had finished up all their interview process. It was late, and I was excited to get that call and just have the opportunity, Howard said. She added that the community and the board was pretty intent on finding someone that had ties to Midland and West Texas and understood the Permian Basin. Those connections are important when it comes to recruiting teachers. Howard has been in the area for 20-plus years. Two jobs she plans to fill are deputy superintendent and associate superintendent for teaching and learning. Howard said she'll make those recommendations at the next board meeting. Also under that body of work will be the work with our first-year teachers, pathways into the profession, grow our own programs, and anything related to supporting teachers and preparing them and providing that professional learning, Howard said. She added that she learned a lot from the work done at ECISD under Interim Superintendent Jim Nelson and Superintendent Scott Murray. Howard said she learned to think differently about the challenges in this area, such as teacher shortages, the economy, and prices. Everything is more expensive, and that impacts our workforce, she said. Of course, the districts are different, and so what worked over there may not exactly work the same here. But there are a lot of things that are pretty fundamental to the work that we will absolutely do. As of right before Christmas, MISD had over 27,000 students and 1,500 teachers. The district was rated B in state accountability ratings this year. Howard has only been on the job since January 3rd, so she didn't know exactly how many openings she had. 39% of MISD teachers have 5 or less years of experience, so the district has to make sure they are very well supported. It's a constant state of hiring, she said. She has told principals to start looking to fill openings early, and human capital will be doing the same. Our human capital team will be trying to recruit earlier and offer positions, knowing that we're going to fill those. You'll be able to place those teachers and really trying to get ahead of that. But the bigger piece is the retention piece. We can't recruit our way out of this teacher shortage because there's just not enough people out there. So we've got to retain the great people we have, and we have to try to bring back some of the people who may have left the profession. She added that all districts are really struggling with teacher vacancies, even in places like the Dallas area. It tells us how bad the shortage is and how critical it is for the state and the nation. We want to be that district people are waiting to work for, and every retired person I've talked to that I know, I've asked them if they're ready to come back to work. And most of them laugh and tell me no, but I'm going to keep asking them anyway, she said. This is Jane reading for the OA for Saturday, January 14th. Aspiring teacher plays one of two Freddies. Hidden in about 20 pounds of material is one of the students that portray Freddie Falcon, the UTPB's mascot. This is Sophia Rutledge, a first year as Freddie, and she had never been a mascot before. I've always loved to dance, and I saw that they were looking for a Freddie, and I interviewed. I took some adjusting to get used to the costume, Rutledge said. It's kind of like a football helmet, and it's mostly just keeping your temperature down, making yourself cool. There's two Freddies. It's me and one other girl, Angelina Cruz, and we switch out. That's how we kind of keep our temperature down, and we make sure to check on one another, Rutledge said. She guessed that the suit weighs about 20 pounds, especially with the helmet. Rutledge isn't on the cheerleading team, but she's associated with it. She'll be heading to the national competition with the cheerleaders in April. Rutledge said being out there with crowds of spectators in the Freddy costume is kind of liberating because very few people know who she is. Of course, the team knows, but very few people know who I am. And so you just get to make people excited. Kids want to high-five you left and right. You get to dance your heart out. It's very freeing, like no embarrassment. Nobody knows who it is, Rutledge said. A junior at UTPB, Rutledge is studying education. I want to be an elementary school teacher, crossing my fingers for an ECISD position. I've always had a ton of school spirit, so I think this goes to show I'm just here to have a good time, have my school spirit with me, she said. Rutledge, who is from Odessa and attended OC Techs for high school, said she had excellent teachers growing up. They were always so supportive. I see them out around town, and they're always asking how I am, what I'm doing in college. It's nice to know that they actually care about you as a student, as a person. I knew that I wanted to do the same for others, and I love children, Rutledge said.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.